If you're a farmer in New York State, join the New York State Grown and Certified program to let people know your food is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, and usually of young farmers. Today, I'm coming to you from Henley Cellars in the Anderson Valley. Thank you to the Henley Cellars people for letting me use their conference room. And am excited to speak with Jeff Conant, who is not a young farmer, but he is a senior international forest programs director at Friends of the Earth in the United States. So he is actually just a regular environmentalist working on forest issues. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here. And for the record, I try to grow as much of my own food as I can, though I'm not a young farmer.
Well, we appreciate that. We are an audience of mostly working agrarians and aspiring agrarians and their fan clubs and friends. And many of us are put in the position, being growers or advocates for a more regional economy, to speak with our communities on food issues. And one of the food issues that has come up more and more is palm oil and the presence of palm oil in all the goodies and cakes from Trader Joe's and all the way down, and other tropical products that we've already dealt with on the fair trade level, coffee and chocolate that come from forest economies and plantation economies around the world. So I was hoping that in this interview we could really just make sure that the young farmer literacy on these plantation issues was as high as possible. So that's my goal. And maybe you could just introduce yourself and your work there at Friends of the Earth.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good. And I mean, what a great audience to be speaking to. I have huge admiration for anybody who is growing food for all of us. So Friends of the Earth is an international federation of grassroots environmental groups. It's known as the largest sort of organized federation of grassroots environmental groups in the world. We're in 75 countries, and I am with Friends of the Earth U.S. I'm based in Berkeley, California. We also have an office in Washington, D.C., and my particular focus, or the focus of my particular campaign, the campaign is called Land Grabs, Forests, and Finance. And the basics of the campaign is that we are trying to save tropical forests and preserve and protect the rights of people who live in tropical forest countries. We work very closely with community-based organizations in several tropical forest countries, including Indonesia, Uganda, Nigeria, Liberia, Guatemala, and others. And what we're trying to do is basically drive back the overwhelming expansion of the palm oil industry, palm oil being right now the fastest growing cause of tropical deforestation worldwide. And there are a lot of great organizations working on this, a whole spectrum of kinds of action that folks are taking, from getting consumer companies to either stop using palm oil or to sort of put pressure on their suppliers to improve their environmental and social management, to what we're doing, which is specifically following the money. What we're doing in our campaign is looking at the U.S. financiers of the palm oil plantation sector and trying to put pressure on them to force them to, as we say, defund deforestation and land grabbing.
So you're following the money back to places in Oakland and San Francisco, New York and Chicago to figure out who's paying for the despoilation of these pristine ecosystems and get them where they sleep, as opposed to fighting it once it's already bulldozes.
Yeah, though, yes, that's right. Though, to be fair, there is so much forest that's already gone. When I made my first visit to Indonesia, when I started this campaign, it was kind of like, say you've been fighting against monoculture corn for a couple of years, and then you fly to Iowa and you see that, in fact, it's wall-to-wall corn. I say that by way of saying it's pretty late in the game in terms of the unbelievable expansion of this industry. But we believe, you know, we're talking about an industry that's taken root in tropical rainforests, and if any ecosystem can recover from human devastation, it's tropical rainforests.
So that seems like it's the, so there's a both stopping the growth of deforestation and working now to begin the project of restoration of these tropical ecosystems. Maybe we can just talk a little bit about the scale of this palm industry and what it's used for, and just kind of explain the supply chain, because I've looked at Google Images of Sumatra and seen the leveling, but not everybody has a visual has visual references for this. So I thought maybe you could give it just kind of a bit of a background of why are people growing palm, they grow palm, what are the impacts, that kind of thing.
Sure, sounds good. So let's see. Essentially, palm oil, well, the trees are called oil palm trees, and the product is called palm oil. It's one particular member of the palm family that produces an incredibly fat-rich nut or fruit that is basically the tree itself starts producing fruit once it's 3 years old, and it can produce until it's about 25 years old. And it's a relatively very new commodity crop. Its origins are in West Africa, where it's been grown since time immemorial as a staple crop, and is actually like any other crop. We're talking to farmers here. It's it's a wonderful plant. It's just that the industrialization vast commercialization of it has turned it into a blight. So about 30 years ago or so, the trees were hybridized to be much more productive than they are in their natural environment. And Indonesia instituted a kind of a social engineering program where they wanted to move a lot of people out of the highly populated urban areas into the remote countryside of Borneo and Sumatra. And along with that, they wanted to give them livelihood. So the World Bank basically instituted a program with Indonesia called the Transmigration Program, where people were sent off to get their, 40 acres and a mule, as it were, out in the rural countryside, which meant tropical rainforests primarily inhabited by indigenous peoples. And they gave them the seedlings of hybrid palm oil trees, oil palm trees. And over the next 20, 30, 40 years now, this has expanded to be basically vast monocultures that are growing across Indonesia and Malaysia. If you picture, so the island of Borneo is the third largest island in the world, and four-fifths of the tropical forests on that island are gone, largely due to palm oil and pulp and paper expansion. About 48 football fields worth of tropical rainforests are destroyed every minute globally, and palm oil is one among many. We're also talking about beef and sugar and soy and all of the other culprits of tropical forest destruction. But once the industry expanded vastly in Indonesia and Malaysia, it started moving into other areas. Essentially, palm oil can be produced anywhere where there were tropical forests. It grows really well in those conditions. So you're seeing vast expansions in sub-Saharan Africa, the Congo Basin, West Africa, and Latin America, basically from southern Mexico down through the Amazon. And, of course, all of the countries where it's being grown are most of the countries where it's being grown happen to also be former dictatorships, where land is just taken out of the hands of local and indigenous peoples and put into the hands of multinational corporations. So what do we use this all for? In the U.S., so far, we've managed to keep palm oil largely out of our biofuels, but in Europe, 10% of the biofuel mix is made up of palm oil, mostly from Indonesia, but also from Latin America and Africa. But in the U.S., most of the palm oil that we encounter on a daily basis is in cookies, chips, donuts, instant noodles, lipstick, toothpaste, shampoo, and it comes under a number of different names on your label. Sometimes it's just called vegetable oil. Sometimes it's palm oil, palm kernel oil. If you look at your shampoo label, lauryl sulfate is palm oil. So
yet another reason to use Dr. Bronner's.
Yep. In fact, Dr. Bronner's is an interesting case because they do use palm oil, but they do it in about as fair trade and regenerative a manner as can be imagined.
Sorry, you were listing all the different places where this palm oil is turning up.
Yeah, so, 90% of the world's palm oil continues to come from Indonesia and Malaysia. One of the things, actually, on the tropical forest question, one of the things that makes it so devastating over there in Indonesia and Malaysia is, well, several things. One is that these countries are habitat to orangutans, Sumatran rhinos, Sumatran elephants, all of which are on the critically endangered species list due specifically to the expansion of the palm oil industry. But another is that much of the tropical soils in Indonesia are peat soils, meaning they're vegetable soils as opposed to mineral soils. And the way the forests are being decimated, the natural forest is burned down and then replaced with palm oil plantations, and the peat soils actually catch fire and smolder for years on end. They're dense with carbon. And so Indonesia is the third largest CO2 emitter in the world after the U.S. and China, specifically because of the burning of peatlands to convert them to oil palm plantations. One question that constantly comes up is, what can we replace palm oil with? It's actually a very efficient crop, such as it goes, but we're using it in, to fry French fries and to make cookies and donuts and breads and instant noodles.
It's not a homeland security issue.
Yeah, right.
It's a junk food issue.
It's a junk food issue in the U.S. It's a junk food issue. So it's not a question of replacing this oil. It's a question of, changing our lifestyles and changing our, nation's consumption habits so that we aren't faced with the products that have come to depend on this oil. But it's also, in terms of following the money, hold on just a sec, sorry about that. In terms of following the money, we have found that about 10% of the global palm oil industry is financed by large institutional investors and asset managers. So a lot of people in the U.S. Will have their pension funds and retirement funds invested in palm oil plantation companies against their knowledge and, I would imagine, against their will. So part of what we're doing is trying to stem the tide of financing for the industry so that it can't essentially afford to continue destroying forests and livelihoods.
And, of course, this is the same format of capital that's complicit in the land grabbing that's going on across the world for other kinds of crops. and developments in mining and extraction of many kinds, and is also happening now here in the United States as capital is trying to find safer places to put itself, and is propelling a really historic concentration and consolidation of ownership in the U.S. farm sector, which is already impacting many of my homies, friends, and networks, and which you really can see on the ground in terms of massive investment in pumps for cropping in marginal environments for export markets. That's an especial kind of opportunity place for capital, is to go in and dump a lot of money into infrastructure to make an area that was previously not producing, say, pecans or cotton, to start producing it. It's interesting that some of the people who are engaged in deforestation and are often blamed for deforestation by, the mass media narrators of big business are small farmers who've been displaced from elsewhere. And this story of kind of reparations and land being turned into a class of basically homeless and cheap laborers to be exploited by the deforestation interests. I wonder that's an interesting whole story that maybe we don't want to talk about right now, but I wonder how deliberate that kind of a policy is to move the most marginal people out onto the frontier.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's absolutely deliberate. Everywhere I've gone to look at the sort of dynamic of the palm oil industry, I mean, I often say it's not about the palm oil, it's not about the forest, it's actually about the land. And that's why our campaign is focused really on the land-grabbing piece. But if you look at, for example, in Indonesia, there's a plantation model, which is the way much of the palm oil industry runs there, and that model is known as plasma. It's the Indonesian word for this model, whereby a company is given a concession by the government. In the vast majority of cases, this concession is or was recently tropical rainforest inhabited by indigenous communities. When the company is given the concession, those communities, their rights are completely erased. And the palm oil company then develops what they call a partnership with these now, landless communities, in which they are given the opportunity to work for the company. And so the company develops what's essentially a feudal model, where they prepare plots of land in palm oil for the smallholders or for the indigenous peoples for 3 to 4 years until the crop bears fruit. They provide food rations and a stipend on credit to the people who they've just dispossessed of their land. And then when the trees are ready to begin harvesting, the indigenous people, smallholders who are now plantation workers, take over the management, but they continue to contract the company for processing and refining and so on. And by the time that they're now working for the company, they're deeply in debt to the company, and it takes, in some cases, 20, 30 years to pay back this debt. So it's an absolutely feudal model, and it's a model that is, systematically designed to take the land out of the hands of local people and indigenous peoples and put it in the hands of multinational corporations.
Well, and just for a refresher, I've just had a really beautiful conversation with Gus Newport, who's a civil rights activist, and he reminded me about Malcolm X, and what the X stands for is exploitation and expropriation, and the 40 acres and a mule is a reference to the promise that was made by General Sherman of the Union Army, who, after being followed by so-called freed slaves for many hundreds of miles as he burnt his way across the South in retreat, or a victorious retreat back to Charleston, he wrote an order, which is called Sherman's Order, which was a land redistribution pledge to these newly freed, formerly enslaved people. And that Sherman's Order was offering this 40 acres and a mule from the Army. So anyway, just in case anybody doesn't know what that reference is about, it's a very worthy piece of study, and you can do it really quickly on the internet. So many organizations are focused on palm oil, and everybody that is thinking about food and food politics has probably had their ears raised on the topic of palm oil. Obviously, most of us in the Young Farmers Movement are really focused on more regional, more diverse food supply chains, and that instead of importing across mega distances using mega tankers from mega corporations and mega capital in mega destructive ways, these ingredients for our obesity-causing diseases, that there would be a much more balanced, nuanced, adaptive, and resilient framework of cultivation in the region, and that the region would not only drink its own water but eat mostly of its own food, and that that would provide employment and prosperity for the people who are so motivated to get out there and make it. I'm looking out at the landscape of wine grapes and olive trees here in Northern California, and obviously there's a lot of things that can grow even in an economy that used to be characterized by plunder. In California, that was gold. Now California is a different kind of an economy. And similarly, I guess the question I have for you is, since so many land-based economies have been so distorted by globalization and by this plantation kind of agriculture, if you could talk about what the restoration would look like, and what these plantations that have been deforested and turned into monocultures and sprayed with herbicide, and the I'm sure there's been runoff problems and erosion problems, and I'm sure they've used big bulldozers to change the hydrology all around. And I know that it's young and optimistic to ask this question, but what does it look like if we succeed in modifying this kind of a landscape according to our knowledge of how ecological restoration could unfold?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and not an easy one necessarily. There are definitely people working on it, and in our campaigning on the financial markets to get them out of deforestation, we have sort of a four-part ask, which is that they commit to disclose, well, that they disclose their investments in palm oil, that they commit to a deforestation-free and land-grab-free policy, that they exclude or divest from any companies that are not meeting a reasonable standard. And then the fourth one is that they repair the damage. And honestly, we're still just exploring what that means. But there are some even larger companies that are beginning to do ecosystem restoration. Now, you know, as you and your listeners well know, when we talk about restoration, at least where I begin, isn't especially in the case of communities in the global south, we're not talking about just restoration of ecosystems. We're talking about restoration of the rights of people to manage those lands appropriately to their livelihood needs. So that's one of the things that a number of Friends of the Earth international groups are working on, is developing sustainable models of regional markets and agroecological solutions, you know, agroecological alternatives to industrial plantation agriculture. When we get to, let's say, the scale of a concession in Indonesia, in order to convert a peatland forest to palm oil plantation, part of what happens is deep canals are dug in the peat soils in order to drain the peat and then use that water to provide irrigation to the palm trees. Indonesia's been seeing the largest forest fires in its history in the last few years because of drying out of that peat. So the basic first step there is to block those peat canals and re-soak that peat so that it can continue to, you know, support biodiversity. And then the second step is that our partners at Friends of the Earth Indonesia have cataloged at least 200 food crops or useful crops that can be grown on peat soils without eroding the ecology. So they are beginning to develop markets for crops that can be grown in a polycrop system on the ecologically restored land. The challenge, I mean, one of the real challenges, you mentioned globalization, is, of course, you know, we're talking for the most part about local and regional land use plans of the sort that I think you and your listeners are really all about. And so that's why we need to essentially kick out the multinationals and, you know, end this model of export-led agriculture if we're going to have any success in restoring those ecosystems. But ecology shows that tropical rainforests, you know, as long as we can bring them back through practices of succession and, you know, ground-up restoration, they can recover. These are the rainforests of Indonesia are the oldest rainforests in the world. They've been devastated over the course of the last three decades. And so if we can take them out of the hands of the multinationals and put them in the hands of people who know how to restore them, which, of course, not all smallholder farmers know this stuff. It's a question of, you know, like all, you know, all of your listeners are doing right now, learning, relearning how to do ecological land management in ecosystems where it's perhaps never been done.
Well, I hope to have on the show some of these amazing agroforestry peeps in this carbon conversation that we are having here nationally, as newly elected president has removed all mention of climate change from the White House website today, and also renewed plans for Keystone Pipeline and Dakota Access Pipeline. I think it's likely that there will be a pulse of indignation, and that we have plenty of jobs for that indignation to get busy with. And the beautiful expertise brought into restoration agroforestry and successional agroforestry, and which is, you know, kind of like permaculture, but is really about repairing dynamism to these ecosystems that have been so degraded and simplified from a macro diversity perspective, in terms of being able to bear carnivores and large mammals and all of the because of the insects and birds that all relies on, all the way down into the soil and the kind of diversity of habitat that's created by this complex plant ecosystem. So we have really amazing expertise, and I'm hoping to bring more of it on to the radio show, of the people who are engaged in training and theorizing and spreading the word on the techniques to use, and Ernst Gutz is one of them. So anyway, keep watching this space, and I want to give you, Jeff, a chance to point towards any campaigns that need clicks or actions that our listeners can take, or especially in the communication stream that they have with many of the people in our country who are in the literati and the glitterati and the technorati and the 1% who eat organic food and are committed to eating more pork from pastured pigs instead of donuts from palm oil. What else could we be transmitting through our farmers markets and CSAs and with our credible voices?
Yeah, great question. I guess I would point folks to a couple of the websites that we have up. One of them is earthhq.foe.org. That's HQ as in headquarters, and that is kind of our communication hub for a couple of our Friends of the Earth campaigns, but specifically there's a page there called Defend the Rainforest, where we have updated news and information on our campaign and on the palm oil scene, and some very simple, easy to understand infographics about sort of the scale and depth of the palm oil crisis, the other oil crisis, as we're calling it. So that's earthhq.foe.org. And then the other one is our Deforestation Free Investment Campaign. There's a website called deforestationfreefunds.org, where we have basically, you can find we show every mutual fund that's available on the market that a lot of people have in their retirement funds, their IRAs, I don't imagine a lot of young farmers have those, but the folks that we talk to often do. And on there, you can see the investments in palm oil that all of the U.S. available mutual funds have. And we're targeting specifically three big investment firms. One is called TIAA, which is the investment fund for university faculty and professors, and we're trying to get them out of palm oil. And we're also targeting Vanguard, which is the biggest owner of mutual funds in the country. And there's a few more on there, but I would just say folks should look at deforestationfreefunds.org and earthhq.foe.org for ongoing information and resources on this issue.
Well, I thank you so much for your tireless work on what I'm sure is often the upstream bureaucratic drudgery of environmentalism. And so many of us get to do the glamorous outdoor rosy cheek making work of this movement. So thank you for staring at a screen and chasing down the bad guys.
Yeah, it's true. I often wish I was out there doing what you all are doing, but both are absolutely necessary. And the more we work together, and the more hope we have for real resilience and real restoration, and maybe we can switch places every, 2 days a week.
Well, I just learned that in the old days, the mining claims in California, your claim was only good if you worked 3 days out of every week on your claim. So there is a pattern to look right to. Thank you all for listening, and for learning more about this, you can click the links that Jeff has kindly posted, his articles on Medium and other venues, to learn more and post it on your own blog and use your Instagram for good cause once in a while. Again, thank you to Handley Cellars for their kind hospitality. If you're interested in beautiful organic wine from Mendocino County, you can join their cellar club at henleycellars.com. It's very, very delicious. And may we all continue to move forward in good spirit. Happy New Year!
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I fill up an ocean with the tears.